Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's talk radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
Thank you for staying tuned. If you've just tuned in, my name's Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. To learn more about my organization, please visit our website at www.cfif.org. Well, it is my extreme pleasure to welcome back to 1330 AM WEBY, one of our favorite guests. For those folks who've been listening for a long time, you'll remember that he joined us when he used to be in the role serving as Assistant General Counsel, and then later as General Counsel for my organization, the Center for Individual Freedom. He then went on a three-year hiatus and went off to the United States Department of Justice in the Civil Rights Division, where he was a trial attorney for the Employment Litigation Section. While he was at DOJ, he prosecuted employment discrimination actions brought by the United States against state and local governments. So quite an interesting job that he had there at the Department of Justice. He has since left the Department of Justice very recently, only about a week ago, and he has joined the Center for Competitive Politics, and we welcome him back on the radio with us right here, and we hope to make him a regular guest once again on your turn. Please welcome back Reed Cox, Legal Director for the Center for Competitive Politics. Reed, it's great to have you back.
Again, Renee.
So tell us about your new position. Let me first start out by putting you in the hot seat and everything that you've learned, although I know you've been familiar with the folks and what they've been doing at the Center for Competitive Politics for a long time, but now you're an insider. Tell us about the Center for Competitive Politics.
I am. It's an organization that was founded by Brad Smith, who was formerly the chairman of the Federal Election Commission, and basically the point of the Center for Competitive Politics is to fight for free speech rights in election law and campaign finance law, which have been dramatically contracting, especially since McCain-Feingold, or the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, passed in 2002 and became law. So this organization is exclusively and dedicates all of its time to making sure that candidates and people and political committees and citizens at large can continue to engage in their First Amendment freedoms to speak and associate with regard to elections.
Now, obviously, in a year when we've got presidential elections, I mean, folks are going to be a little more tuned in to the issues surrounding campaigns, political speech, but you guys don't exist only in political campaign years for presidency, right? I mean, this is a busy job that you guys have day in and day out.
We do, and we exist year round in election years and off election years, and you know, certainly the work gets busier around election time because, quite frankly, Renee, while many people are familiar with campaign finance reform, and while often the media portrays it as a good thing, quite frankly, campaign finance reform is, like a lot of other legislation, used to really decide winners and losers. And it's not some totally fair system out there. Rather, it limits speech in elections, and it prescribes rules. And, you know, oftentimes those rules favor incumbents. Oftentimes those rules prevent citizens, like your neighbors, from getting together and spending their money together on issues that they are interested in. And quite frankly, campaign finance laws impose all kinds of restrictions and requirements whenever anyone wants to talk about candidates or issues, both at election time and even during the off year sometimes.
Well, right now, we're getting ready tomorrow. We have some primary elections going on here, some of which will, in fact, decide some of the biggest local offices right here in our listening audience area. And so there are an awful lot of signs out there right now, political signs out there. What is the your organization? Have you taken a position as a Center for Competitive Politics, taken a position on political signs? I mean, some people, you know, get real frustrated seeing these things along the side of the road, on the public highways, public thoroughfares, and other places. You know, other folks are like, you know, this is our right. We, you know, people should be able to put these signs, you know, where they want to put these signs. And in fact, there's a debate going on, I know, in my brother-in-law's neighborhood where they have a no-sign ordinance. And someone put one of the political signs, and they said, this is just different. Political speech is different. Is that true, Reed?
Well, I think you actually have a few questions there, Renee. And let's get to your last one first about, you know, political sign ordinances. Political speech, well, to a certain extent, political speech is different in the sense that, you know, if you really think about the way our Constitution is framed and what its purposes are, we have a Republican and Democratic form of government where the power flows up from the people to the government. And so perhaps the most important speech there is out there concerns how we're going to get represented, how our representatives are supposed to deal with political issues, et cetera. And so in that sense, you know, when you start to prescribe political speech, the question is, if you're prescribing that, that really generally means you can prescribe almost anything else. Now, you know, the Center for Competitive Politics position on really virtually any political speech, whether it's a yard sign or whether it's a television advertisement, is that more speech is good. We should not be scared of speech, rather, to the extent that citizens or their elected representatives don't like what someone else is saying, that what the First Amendment says the answer to that is, it should be more speech from them countering those ideas. Now, you know, there's always, unfortunately, the law is never so clean-cut as you can just say, well, there's a rule, you can't prescribe political speech. Obviously, there are issues as to where the signs are being put in terms of, you know, just like you probably couldn't put a greenhouse out on the state highway because it's not your land, there's obviously issues about, you know, if you're putting political signs on someone else's property. But when I hear you talk about political sign ordinances, usually these are targeted to, you know, you live in a neighborhood and your neighborhood gets together or the community gets together and says, doesn't matter if it's your house, if it's your lawn or not, we're not going to allow you to put political signs up. Well, that is a huge problem constitutionally because not only have they prescribed what the Constitution looks at as the, some of the most important speech out there, but by singling out politics, they've actually engaged in what lawyers call content restriction, which means that they've specifically singled out the subject that they want to restrict, which is a big no-no constitutionally.
So they're sort of doing censorship is essentially what it is then.
Yes, very much so.
All right. Well, you mentioned that the Center for Competitive Politics, that part of your mission is to protect and expand First Amendment rights. What kind of cases are you guys involved in right now, and what is it that you're looking at, if you can, you know, tilt your hand a little bit and show us your cards?
Sure. Well, you know, one thing that the Center is constantly concerned about is making sure that ordinary American citizens can continue to speak about issues, even when that involves mentioning, as an example, you know, names of their elected representatives. And, you know, this has been a big deal ever since McCain-Feingold became law, because basically McCain-Feingold had a restriction that said, you know, even if you're independent of the candidate, groups of citizens can't pool their money together in the corporate form and then use it to buy an election ad within 30 days of a primary or 60 days of a general election on television or radio. And of course that continues to be something that even though it's become clearer over the past couple years that there's that citizens should still be able to do that so long as they don't actually run an ad that says vote for or vote against a candidate, it continues to be a problem because there is that law that was passed by McCain-Feingold and the contours of the law aren't very clear. Now, quite frankly, what has happened in the intervening years is that, you know, increasingly what people are going after is, you know, well, what money can people spend on speech issues on close to elections? So one of the suits that we have going on right now talks about, you know, well, if citizens come together and they have no contact with candidates and they have no contact with political parties, can they come together and pool their own money to pay for advertising? And are there any limits on what money that they can pool? And, for instance, the Federal Election Commission is saying that, you know, even if you're totally independent of the candidates and the political parties, you still have very small, very low limitations on how much money any one person can donate to that effort, and we're fighting that right now.
And what about, you know, not even where someone maybe makes, you know, they have no contact whatsoever with the candidate, they make no expense whatsoever. Let's take an example of, you know, something that I understand Walmart did recently. It was in the news. And they came out and, you know, they didn't tell their employees not to vote for Barack Obama, but they said, you know, if Obama gets into office, things could change significantly for Walmart employees because he's very pro-union and he's, you know, going to push unionization for Walmart employees, which isn't necessarily a good thing for them. I mean, you do think their hand, will Walmart's hand get slapped? Should an employer's hand get slapped if he or she makes their political position known to their employees?
You know, there are some cases out there that are starting to explore this, and what the difficulty, of course, in this arrangement is that the people that are trying to silence corporations like Walmart in speaking on these topics basically say, look, Walmart's in a dominant position when it comes to their employees, and so even though they don't tell their employees who to vote for, their employees feel threatened when they get these instructions. Now, you know, quite frankly, you know, we would here at the center applaud both Walmart speaking, so long as they obviously don't do anything that threatens the employment relationship with their employees, which clearly would be illegal. I mean, but we also would encourage the employees. You know, they're not powerless. They can come together, and whether it's through a protest or whether it's through pooling their own money for advertising, or for that matter, whether it's reaching out to the media, they have their own means of speaking about the election and about the issues that are important to them.
Excellent point. So that's a little bit of advice out there for any of the employers who are trying to decide, you know, should they even let their sentiment be known to their employees. Reed, we've got a caller who has a question. Is it okay if we take it?
Terrific, yes.
Go ahead, Mark. It's your turn.
Thank you very much, and Reed, thanks for coming on the show. Maybe a different perspective is the fairness doctrine, where the radio stations are, they're going to be targeted. I don't know if that's individual. Would your agency look at that? I'll just hang up and listen. Thank you.
I really appreciate this question because, you know, the fairness doctrine has kind of made a comeback, you know, long thought dead, and now we're hearing about it more again.
Give people a little history about it first, if you will, so they know what we're talking about.
Sure. There was, you know, it used to be, you know, boy, more than a decade ago, maybe more than two decades ago, the FCC, which is the Federal Communications Commission, had a rule that basically when broadcast stations, whether they were television stations or radio stations, would run pieces involved in political issues and political candidates, that they had to give, you know, what they would kind of colloquially call as equal time. So in other words, you couldn't give one side of the story. And it's making a comeback because a lot of, quite frankly, people on the left have said that, you know, conservatives enjoy such an advantage on talk radio that perhaps the answer to level what they say is leveling the playing field is that for, you know, the amount of time that conservatives are able to hear talk radio, those radio stations should have to broadcast the other viewpoint. Now, I mean, I don't want to go too technically, but kind of one of the reasons for the Fairness Doctrine, or at least one of the reasons the Supreme Court said the Fairness Doctrine was okay back decades ago, was that technologically there was there was spectrum, or only so many TV stations that could be carried over the airwaves, only so many radio stations that could be carried over the airwaves. to a certain extent, that whole technological justification is gone now,
mm-hmm.
because we have really virtually unlimited amounts of media that can start up through cable, through satellite, et cetera. There isn't as much of a scarcity factor. The other issue, quite frankly, is that it's not at all clear in the real world how much the fairness doctrine really levels the playing field. And moreover, what I would say is that the rationale of leveling the playing field has been rejected by the Supreme Court. You know, over and over again, not in fairness doctrine cases, but in campaign finance cases, the Supreme Court says the only reasons you can limit speech through either contribution limitations or even very rarely expenditure limitations is to prevent corruption. And what they define as corruption is what you would think, that basically there's, you know, bribery or undue influence or, you know, money's being exchanged for political favors. Well, that's not at all leveling the playing field. Quite frankly, in fact, just this last term, in a case decided by the Supreme Court, they said once again that, you know, the First Amendment doesn't talk about equaling out the amount of speech out there. What the First Amendment does is allow as much speech as possible so that people have the right to reply based on their support.
Well, and what's interesting is it seems like when you talk about the fairness doctrine, it's only targeting talk radio. But, I mean, let's look at our newspapers, look at liberal TV show, you know, the news media on television. And certainly, you know, the scales seem to balance out a little bit more.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if your caller, I don't know what media your caller reads daily or often, but, you know, I noticed a few weeks ago, or maybe it's even a little longer than that, that someone on the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, said, you know, well, wait a minute, think about what this means, because if the fairness doctrine gets readopted, it's not currently law. It fell out of favor decades ago and went away. But if it comes back, you know, it could have all kinds of unintended consequences that we don't think about. For instance, you know, what does this do? Are people going to start counting up internet sites?
Right. Right.
And say, well, an internet site needs to show the opposing viewpoint.
Right. Hey, Reed, we need to take a quick break. Can you stay with us through the break, and then we'll have about 5 minutes when we come back?
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll be right back after this break. Please stay tuned. We've got about 5 minutes left in this segment, and we are talking with Reed Cox. He is the legal director for the Center for Competitive Politics. To learn more about the Center for Competitive Politics, visit them on the web at www.campaignfreedom.org. Oh, yeah, my pleasure. Please visit their website, campaignfreedom.org. All right, Bill's got a question. Go ahead, Bill. It's your turn.
Yeah, competitive, and what I was going to talk about starts with a C, too, competition. I want to take your guests back to the old days that I grew up in. Do you remember when we had rabbit ears?
Yes,
back in the 50s and 60s?
Yes.
You only had three TV stations, ABC, CBS, and NBC?
Sure.
And they had a lock. They could actually tell the people what the news was. They didn't have any competition at all. You know what where I'm coming from?
Yeah, what you got was what they wanted you. They fed you what they wanted you to know.
Sure, and as soon as a satellite and cable came on, they had competition. Now they're losing viewers, and you know that. And it's the same thing with radio. If the liberals or the left are so concerned about the fairness doctrine, to me, competition is what sells the radio waves. And if they can't make a go of it, then they want to come in the back door. And that's what gets me, because Al Franken, wasn't he on Air America? They went under, and things of that sort. This stuff about we have to bring in the fairness doctrine because we can't get the other side. Well, wait a minute. I believe the radio waves are open, and if somebody wants to start a liberal talk show, they can do it, can't they?
Yeah, Bill, I totally agree with you. There are, you know, especially, you know, actually surprisingly now, the largest barrier to entry anymore is really cost. And so probably the hardest thing to start up is a new newspaper, because the startup costs of a new newspaper are huge, obviously, but But the fact is that the court had always, the Supreme Court had always said that it was only when there was an actual scarcity, just as you were talking about, you know, there was only three television stations or broadcast networks, et cetera, was the reason why you could allow the fairness doctrine. And, you know, quite frankly, from any perspective, whether it's conservative or liberal or Democrat or Republican, what we're saying here at the Center for Competitive Politics is, instead of shutting off other people's speech, what these people should be doing is engaging in counter speech.
Reid, I don't mean to shut off your speech, but we got about 10 seconds left. You're welcome to stay on through the break if you want. But otherwise, we want to thank you for being on the program. We've been talking with Reid Cox, who's the legal director for the Center for Competitive Politics. Visit him at campaignfreedom.org. We'll be right back after this short break.